Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer, Joe Metz, and Zach Graham.
Presented by the FTN Network.
Bringing you the analysis you need on breaking news, betting markets, and your fantasy lineups.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast. NBA Podcast, fantasy, it doesn't matter. Anything basketball we're talking about here. And I'm back. I haven't been here in a while. It's a weird time, man. You got to balance football. You got to balance basketball. But luckily, my partners in crime, Joe Metz and Zach Graham, Kawhi-Zenberg himself, have been carrying the show. But look, we got a week and change into the 2021 NBA season, and a lot's already happened. So here on a Wednesday, Tuesday night, we're sitting down. We're going to break down some of the early takeaways, some surprises, some overreactions, and what we've seen thus far. Joe, we'll start with you. What's going on, man? Milwaukee, man, they're struggling right now. I don't think they're going to make it to the Eastern Conference playoffs. But all jokes aside, it's been, again, a fun start to the season. A lot of blowouts, I feel like. But there's also been, I feel like the we'll talk about it. But I feel like it's been a lot of fun basketball to watch because the pace is a little different because there's not as many fouls being called.
Yeah, I think you hit on it, and we'll obviously dive into it when we talk about our early takeaways. I'm doing well, enjoying the NBA season, and Stan Van Gundy summed it up perfectly on Twitter. The flow of basketball this season has already greatly improved. It's never not been enjoyable for me to watch an NBA game, but it's only becoming increasingly more enjoyable because we actually get basketball for 48 minutes instead of, you know, end of the game, 4 minutes just back and forth with clock stoppage and free throws. So it's been a good start to the season. Three, four games in, LeBron James is resting. Not my goat. That's Giannis. But I'm gonna, the one thing I do want to plug is the new FTN Bets betting package. We switched things up a little bit to make it more accessible and inclusive for you, the user. Instead of just segmented sport packages now, we have one Diamond Club all-inclusive package, $49.99 per month. That's a $20 discount. You get all sports, all tools, all handicappers, all articles. Literally everything on FTN Bets is included in that package. And I would pay that much just for Josh Gross in any sport. So getting everything else is kind of like a trickle-down bonus here. So sign up, use promo code BEANS, get a nice little discount, and just stack up the money with the FTN Bets team. It's been great. But I also want to kick it to Zach. You know, him and I touched on it a little bit last week with the FTN NBA season-long listener fantasy league. Zach, why don't you give us an update about where the league's at and, you know, what our plans are going forward with the incorporation of the podcast?
Yeah, man, we'll keep the recap kind of quick this week, because next week we'll get into the first of our eight, you know, I guess you could call them like subscriber interviews, listener league participant interviews. I'll go ahead and tease it now. It'll be the definitive EZB interview next Tuesday night on the FTN NBA podcast. So I know everybody in the FTN NBA community will be excited for that. So we'll bring EZ in, talk a little bit more about him, and how he got to FTN and be a part of our family. And we can talk our matchup, because if we're looking at the week two matchups here in the listener league, I am taking on EZB this week after what was a successful first week for myself, a little Saturday-Sunday comeback against our guy Kruggers. And then I have to mention you two guys kind of bringing up the rear right now.
Can I just... So
defend yourself.
I alluded to it. It's tough to balance basketball and football right now. I forget if it was
we
you
got a
or
text
Joe.
From Adam at, we had
right.
A text
dude,
from
I messaged.
Like, wait, we're drafting?
I or messaged said, Joe and
league? I'm like,
no,
we're drafting right now.
The draft was over. Like, it was the next day, and I literally messaged Joe. I said, "Yo, when is our draft again?" So I felt like crap, but and it's worse too because my best player is Damian Lillard, who is playing bad right now, which is weird. I don't know. It's but yeah, that's totally my fault. But we'll see what I can make happen, dude. When you're balancing like eight season long fantasy football leagues, and then DFS, and then content, and the podcast, like, it's a massive L on my part. But Like, I'm used to it, man. I'm an idiot.
I'll say this. I just looked at my team and Hassan Whiteside's on my bench. That tells you everything you need to know about my team, that I have Hassan Whiteside.
So I'll give you a little bit of slack, Adam, because when we did the draft, the Bills were also playing on Monday Night Football.
Oh, yeah. There was no chance I was doing that draft then.
Right. Yeah, right. So you have your priorities in order. I don't fault you for that. But tough week for you against, I believe,
1-7. Stefano. Yeah, I looked at Steph's team, and he's got, like, Trae Young, Jaylen Brown. Must be nice. He has, like, 3 Celtics on his team, and he gets overtime every other game, apparently. That's cool. Good for you. Good for you, man.
And Joe, 1-8 in your first matchup. We talked about Hassan Whiteside being on your team. We'll see how long he stays there. I imagine we'll see him hit the waivers
probably later this week. 10 minutes.
Yeah. But looking at some of the week 2 matchups, I mentioned myself and Easy B. Let's see, Joe, you've got, I think, Ezekiel Alba in your matchup.
I believe so.
And then Adam going up against J. Crow Longhorn, my other Central Texas guy here, J. Crow Longhorn in the Discord. So excited to see how this week plays out. And obviously we'll recap how week 2 turned out, preview week 3 when we talk to EZB next week.
Yeah. And I'm tilting because would have been tough for me to make that draft. But looking at everybody else's teams, it's like I have Siakam on my team. I have Jonathan Isaac on my team. I have a lot of players who aren't even playing basketball right now. And then I see, like, my matchup this week, Ja Morant, which kind of is a perfect segue. Let's talk about the early season. Again, it's very early, obviously, but some takeaways from the first week and change of the NBA season. And the first person that I want to talk about is Ja Morant. I mean, we don't have a week, you know, MVP award winner. But if we did, I don't think it's really a debate that Ja Morant, maybe Ja, you know, Paul George, Steph Curry, like Ja Morant is playing out of his mind. And Zach and I talked about this on the Saturday stream because opening the first huge slate of the year, Zach and I were in the Discord and we're like, yeah, I mean, Ja's good, but I don't like his price tag on DraftKings. He goes off. And then I believe he went off. I don't know if he went off again that same night on Saturday, Zach, but he had another good game. But he's playing out of his mind. Like, he's scoring at will. He pretty much gives you one of those, like, wow highlights every single night. And Memphis is obviously, you know, made a nice push last year getting into the playoffs. They're going to get Dylan Brooks back. They're going to have Jaren Jackson Jr. hopefully for the entire season. Steven Adams is still, you know, we talked about this, Zach, on Saturday, like, and I compared it. Like, I think Adams and Ja work really well together because Ja is very similar to Russell Westbrook in his prime with Oklahoma City, right? Just attacking the basket with insane athleticism. Obviously can create really well, much better shooter than Russell Westbrook. But like Steven Adams in the pick and roll, like he knows how to play with a super athletic point guard like that's going to slash. So Joe, Ja Morant, I mean, there's not 5 to 7 players in the league right now that are more exciting to watch.
No, there's not. He's averaging 35 points a game right now. I know it's, you know, 3 games in, but that's still pretty remarkable. He's shooting 62% from inside of the arc. He's shooting 44% from 3, 81% from the free throw line. Like, he is, again, I'm not saying these numbers are all going to hold up. They do, dear Lord, watch out. He's also averaging 8 assists a game. Like, he's doing it, quite literally doing it all, especially with Dylan Brooks out. He's shouldering that secondary scoring load. But I also want, you know, while we're on the topic of just Ja Morant and the Grizzlies, very quickly as an early takeaway, Steven Adams has been great. Like, very, very good. Steven Adams is averaging over 30 minutes a game for the first time since the 2018-19 season, averaging 13 and 13 a game with almost 5 assists per game. Like you said, I just think he fits this system well. I think he fits with Ja Morant well in the pick and roll. His role is not to come in and score 20 points a game. His role is to clean up the misses. His role is to be a force down low. That's exactly what he's done. It's translated well. And he fits alongside Jaren Jackson because Jackson is a player that needs to be able to stretch the floor. You know, Jonas Valanciunas didn't stretch the floor a ton, but had the ability to step out and hit threes. Steven Adams never really even considers that.
Yeah, and so that Joe Val, like, they asked him to do that more because Jaren Jackson Jr. didn't play for the first half of last season.
Exactly.
Like, it's really interesting, too, because Steven Adams is not a high usage player. Obviously, we know that he makes his living off, you know, rolling the basket and, you know, getting loose balls and getting offensive rebounds and scoring. Yep. So like when you pair him with Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., who are both very high usage players, and Dylan Brooks is like a 30% usage guy last year, he's coming back. Like, you don't need your center to, like, Joe Val is a guy that you wanted to post up a lot. Like, you're not going to have Steven Adams post up much at all. And that's fine because he's great in his role and he's going to help this team. He's great in the pick and roll. Then you can have Dylan Brooks, Ja Morant, and Jaren Jackson Jr. dominate the usage. Like, Memphis is very fun, obviously. And Ja Morant's a huge reason why. Zach, what are your thoughts on what we've seen from Ja so far and the Grizzlies as a whole? And then start with one of your early takeaways from the 2021 season.
Sure. So I think in a vacuum, it would be silly to say that I'm not impressed with what Ja Morant has done through the first three games. Just kind of going back to what you were saying about the Saturday stream we did talking about Ja that day, at least we got it right that day, right? He didn't really live up to that. I believe it was a 9-1 price tag on DraftKings, but he sandwiched that game with what to this point in his career are career games. I think 37 points in the opener and then 40 in the third game of the season, I believe, are now his second and fourth highest scoring outputs in his career. And you guys mentioned to me that in the big picture, I don't think about Ja Morant any differently now than I did a week ago. I think he is, you know, making a normal jump and taking advantage of the extra opportunity that he has with Dylan Brooks out of the lineup. You talked about how much or how high of a usage player Dylan Brooks was last year. And when he comes back, like, Ja Morant's not shooting 23 times a game. He's just not. He's not going from 15 attempts to 23. He's not going from 19 points to 35. I would be surprised if Ja Morant ends up averaging even half that distance between his points per game average last year and this year. I think he's going to settle more in the low to maybe mid-20s in terms of his points per game. Joe mentioned the efficiency, which is just out of this world right now, and it's a small sample size through three games. So I think everybody, rightfully so, is kind of falling all over themselves about Ja Morant because of his individual performances. And again, I'm not knocking it. I just, like I said to start this, I don't see him any differently as I did when the season kicked off. I'm not as impressed as everybody else with Ja.
That's fair. I mean, like, and a huge reason why we talked about, in terms of a DFS perspective, not loving him at his, you know, elevated, you know, low 9K price range on DraftKings some of those nights was because last year we saw, like, he was mostly, and Joe, you can attest to this as well, like, he was mostly a floor play in DFS. Obviously, there were some upside games because he's an incredible player, but he was mostly, like, 38 to 45 fantasy points. And a lot of that's because of Dylan Brooks not being there. So obviously his usage and the shot attempts are going to go down. Right now he's averaging 25 drives per game, 12 field goal attempts off drives, which obviously that number's coming down, but he's still going to be among the league leaders, right? He was top five last year, around 18 per game. How would you rank these Western Conference guards right now? This is an interesting question. Just overall, how you feel about them as players, or, you know, right now and for the future. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Ja Morant, De'Aaron Fox, SGA, try to find one more, but those three we'll start with.
Ooh, Ja Morant, SGA, and De'Aaron Fox. And again, it's going to sound like recency bias. I would have said this prior to this season. I think I go Ja.
I'll add Donovan Mitchell to that group. Is Mitchell first, or is Ja?
Donovan Mitchell's my first, and I don't think it's particularly close.
Yeah, I would assume most people would agree with you, but I was just scrolling through Western Conference guards, and I just thought I had
it. This is tough. I think I go Mitchell, Ja, Fox, SGA is what I think I go. But the thing is, I think SGA's ceiling is higher than De'Aaron Fox's.
And SGA, it's tough because, like, we don't get to see a lot of him because he plays for the Thunder. Yep. They're not on national television. Like, the you know, anybody that knows basketball knows SGA is one of the top 20, you know, players in basketball for the future. Like, you want SGA on your team, but it's like, you don't get to see the highlights that Ja Morant we see every, you know, and LaMelo Ball and these young players, because, yep, I mean, not that Charlotte's a huge market or anything, but, like, they're getting more primetime games and everything. Zach, how would you rank them before we move on?
Donovan Mitchell, clear number one.
Yeah, I agree.
A level above the rest, maybe two levels in my mind. I'm really high on Donovan Mitchell.
So am I.
Not a hot take there, but I think I would go kind of to your point. Adam, like we don't see a lot of SGA. And I also think people are a little bit blinded just by those, the situations that those players are in. I would have SGA second, not by much over Ja.
Heard it here first. Zach thinks Ja Morant's a bad basketball player.
And De'Aaron Fox would bring up the rear, but I'm a big fan of, you know, not just those young guards, but kind of the young core of the league that's coming up and I think going to take over very soon for some of the kind of household names that us three grew up on.
All right. Well, let's segue to you guys both talked about, we talked about Ja Morant. Joe, you had Ja Morant on your list as well. Yeah. Zach and Joe, you guys both have a very interesting storyline, probably one of the five storylines from the first week of the season on your list. And that's the new fouls or the lack thereof, right? That we saw in the offseason that the refs, you know, we saw Trae Young in the playoffs getting all these fouls, you know, Steph Curry over his career, you know, pump faking and then leaning into defenders. And they're clearly making an effort to not call as many fouls, and it's affecting a lot of players. But it feels like it's more so affecting than anybody, James Harden. Talk about James Harden. Again, struggling to start the season. We've seen him struggle at times before to start seasons. But this is interesting. And I'll talk about some of the numbers I found with James Harden in terms of foul drawing. But clearly, this is different to start the season.
Yeah, so I almost put, you know, Harden and the foul situation in the overreaction section of the show sheet, but I think it does belong here in just kind of the overall takeaways, because we've seen James Harden, whether it's dealing with the way the league wants to call fouls this year or in the past of him just playing himself into shape, not just last year, but seemingly multiple years. Like that's just kind of his style. So I'm not overreacting to Harden's slow start, but I do think it's clearly something to watch. Because again, small sample size, four games so far for Brooklyn. And James Harden throughout his career, 8.7 free throw attempts per game and double digits each of the last, I believe, 7 years in terms of free throw attempts per game. Through these four games this year, 3 free throw attempts per game for James Harden. So I think it's pretty clear that he is almost like enemy number one of the league right now in terms of how they're directing these.
Didn't
these
Steve Nash goals. Like say as much too, pretty much?
I think actually didn't. Yeah, I didn't hear him speak on it, but I would not be surprised.
It was something along the lines of like there's certain players that they had in mind when they changed these foul rules, and we all know James is one of them. It was something along those lines, but
yeah. Which is, I mean, it makes sense. It's not wrong. He's not wrong.
I mean, it's James Harden, Trae Young, and Steph.
Yeah, you look at Trae Young, yeah. he's dropped over 3 free throw attempts per game. So it's going to happen.
And yeah, it's early.
I had Trae Young kind of as the other example here, but obviously not as extreme as when you're looking at Harden stats so far. And I kind of think this is like, you remember when the league was calling technical fouls on everybody, essentially for like if you sneezed on the bench, you get a T.
Kind of like the taunting in the NFL right now.
Exactly. And so I don't think that type of stuff is like, I don't think they're going to continue focusing on this all year. I think it eases up as we go. So I think Harden does get into better shape. When we get a larger sample size, he's going to be more towards what we expect. But they'd have to regress a lot in the way they're calling those fouls, right? Jumping in, kicking your leg, all that type of stuff, creating the contact. I'm a fan of what they're doing, but I'm sure, you know, Nets fans are kind of gritting their teeth right now.
So last year, James Harden drew a shooting foul 14.9% of the time. This year, it's at 7.2. So like a massive drop off, obviously. Yeah. Again, it's early. Joe, what are your thoughts on Harden, the new foul situation in the NBA? And look, man, I mean, right now, I mean, Patty Mills is the second best player in the Spurs, right? Like, that's facts.
On the Nets.
It's so weird, by the way. I think
the parallel that Zach drew to when the NBA tried to enforce their technical foul rules a little bit, they almost overcompensated. I think we're seeing some of the same. And Zach, when you brought that up, the first player that came to mind was when Tim Duncan got ejected on the bench.
Don't get me started on Joey Crawford.
We could all go on and on about Joey Crawford. He's he's down there. He's not the WOAT, but he's down there. there's him, Scott Foster, and Tim Donahue are like my three least favorite mm-hmm. Referees ever. But I think this rule is going to affect Harden's season overall, but I definitely think that you could put Harden both in the early takeaways and the overreaction segments of this podcast, because at the end of the day, like, we have now a 10-year sample size of the player that James Harden is. He's not a 36% shooter from the field. He's not a 32% three-point shooter. You know, free throws haven't dropped out. He's only shooting three a game right now, but still 91%. Like, he's not a 17-8 kind of guy. Especially without Kyrie, he's going to continue to operate as the primary ball handler. I looked at his MVP odds prior to jumping on here, and they still sit at best 25-1 on BetRivers, but also down to 16-1 on PointsBet. So the books aren't budging, and I think that's probably the best way to handle it, simply because it'll take, you know, we could get on the podcast next week, and he could have just had a week of the numbers John Morant put up the first week of the season. We'd be sitting here not surprised whatsoever. So I don't think there's anything to worry about if you're a fan of Harden, if you're a Nets fan, if you're on the Nets. The only thing I think is different this year is the fact that Harden is in a situation, and we've talked about this, Zach, like, he's in a situation right now where, unlike when he was on Houston, where if he starts playing this poorly or he's only shooting 36% from the field, not getting the free throw line, If Houston wanted to win, they did not have a choice outside of just having him chuck up shots until they go in. He's in a situation now in Brooklyn, a good situation where, okay, you don't feel so great, your shot, it feels off. You can defer to who I think is the best offensive player ever. So he has the ability to defer, sit back, collect himself, and they can still win games because, again, they have Kevin Durant on their team. They didn't have that, or he didn't have that opportunity before. Where I think that might be playing a little bit of a part, where you see him playing a little more passive, but not in a disrespectful or bad way, just in more of a strategic or just putting the team first kind of way, I think.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if anything, if they go one way or another as the season goes on, if they, you know, kind of lean more towards even more towards the fouls, or if they kind of dial it back a little bit. But it's clearly impacting some scores and some different ways that they do score the basketball. So it's going to be a storyline probably the rest of the season, honestly. Zach, you also have the Blazers on here, and they've been off to a pretty slow start, especially Damian Lillard, which is kind of odd to see. He's been just, you know, purely one of the best players in basketball for a long time now. Obviously, new coaching staff there, a couple new players. They still have that same core in that backcourt of Lillard and McCollum. McCollum's playing fantastic so far this season. But what are your thoughts on the Blazers here as an early takeaway?
Well, I said, and I commented on Stefano's tweet. I think last night he sent out a tweet talking about, you know, have we ever seen Damian Lillard play this bad? And I said, yeah, 3 months ago in the Olympics. Yeah, when you couldn't, well, no, oh, the Olympics, in the Olympics. Yeah. When you couldn't play him because you had to play Jrue Holiday because the international game exposes some people. And again, I'm not knocking Dame Lillard. He's one of the best players in the game. I'm just saying, like, we've seen some of the deficiencies. You know, everybody talks about kind of his supporting cast on why Portland can't get over the hump in the West. And obviously, the West has been tough for, you know, the last decade plus. But some of this has to fall on Damian Lillard at some point, too. And mm-hmm. I didn't put this in my overreactions section here on the show sheet because this is what I expected. I had the Portland under. I've talked about all preseason about the how there was issues with Damian Lillard and the organization, whether it was, again, him thinking you guys aren't doing enough to help me get over that hump in the Western Conference and get out of the West Finals, which I believe they've been to once in his tenure, I believe, but obviously no trips to the finals. And then he was not happy with the Chauncey Billups hire at head coach. And so I've just kind of thought for months now that this team, there's going to be a reckoning. And I think that could be coming sooner rather than later if Dame gets a little bit disgruntled or publicly disgruntled with this situation. This is a team that, you know, you can't throw too much behind preseason results, but they didn't win a preseason game. They came out and lost their home opener to Sacramento of all teams. And then you see them bounce back almost a 30-point win against Phoenix the next time out. this team's never going to bottom out with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum in the backcourt. You know, you can add Yusuf Nurkic at center for good measure, but then they come out last night and get beat by almost 40 at home to the Clippers with no Kawhi and no Marcus Morris. So to me, like, this team is in for a bumpy road this season, and you know, I'm just glad that to this point I wasn't way off, you know, a month ago when I was saying this team is going to underachieve.
It's fair. I will say, though, I'm glad to see McCollum healthy and playing well, because, like, there's a lot of friends I have that, like, and they're Sixers fans, so there was obviously McCollum, Ben Simmons rumors, and they didn't want McCollum because they thought he was kind of overrated. Like, CJ McCollum's awesome. I love CJ McCollum. But, yeah, I mean, like,
what, you let him in scoring all three games, Adam.
Right. He's, like, do I think this duo can work for, you know, to get to the finals? No, probably not. Although, my Dame in the finals would be, like, so fun to watch. It's not going to happen, but yeah, I mean, they're clearly not a great team right now, and if Lillard's struggling, then they have no shot, obviously. Lillard's not going to struggle like this. He's going to be good. We know that. Joe, you have written down here, so we talked about the fouls, we talked about James Harden, we talked about the Blazers, but, I mean, John Morant's been amazing, but maybe the surprise of the season, and one of the many reasons Charlotte continues to climb in the league pass kind of rankings, how about Miles Bridges?
Yeah, he looks unbelievable. Through his first four games, undefeated, the Charlotte Hornets are undefeated. He's averaging 25 points, 8.5 rebounds, pair of steals, pair of assists on 64% shooting from inside the arc, 36% from outside the arc, 53% overall, playing really well. Again, this is a situation where, similar to Ja Morant, I do not expect this production to continue.
Yeah. And they've been missing, what, Rozier for a couple games, and PJ Washington's been out.
PJ Washington, so that has helped. He's average. The thing is, he's still averaging 35 minutes a game. I don't necessarily think that goes down a ton. I think he correlates really, really well. Like, this is not just from a statistical or daily fantasy standpoint. I just think he correlates well and spaces the floor well with LaMelo Ball.
Their connection is like,
it's the highlight reels are unbelievable.
It's like quarterback receiver type stuff. Like, you see it every single night. Yep. It's you know, LaMelo last, I think it was their last game, threw like a behind the back pass, Bridges caught it and then threw down a dunk, because he does that like six times a game now. You see a lot of times, obviously, like, the oops are always there, but a lot of time it's LaMelo making these full court passes. Like, they're so fun. And, like, Gordon Hayward's kind of that stable veteran that's going to be good every single game, or at least solid every single game. They're so fun, man. And Bridges is a huge reason why.
They're a top three league pass team for me right now. I've been cycling between them and Chicago quite a bit. We'll obviously touch on the Bulls later, but these are the only two undefeated teams in the Eastern Conference. Looks phenomenal for my over 38.5 wins for the Hornets. I think all of our win-loss totals are looking really good right now. So why don't we just stop the season now? We'll do our round of touting and resume next season. Yeah, Miles Bridges looks great. He's done everything to earn this playing time. I know they brought in Mason Plumlee in the offseason, but with the way he's playing, I do think this will almost force James Borrego's hand to run more small ball with PJ Washington at the five when he comes back, just to keep Miles Bridges on the court with LaMelo Ball. The interesting part of the Hornets, and I'm sure, you know, Zach, I see LaMelo on your overreaction sheet, but they're being very, very, very conservative with his playing time. He hasn't played 30 minutes in a game yet this season. There's been a mixture of foul trouble, but not on Monday, their game prior, it was either Saturday or Friday, didn't touch the court once in the fourth quarter. Game was getting out of hand versus the Nets, and Zach, you and I talked about it on stream, but to not have your 20-year-old phenom come in when the game is getting close, knowing he can be a game breaker, not even come in for a single rotation, it surprised me a little bit. A lot of it has to do with Ish Smith's play, but I don't know if that's something that's going to happen for 82 games.
Yeah, that was wild, by the way. I mean, this team, when they get in transition, it's like, if you're watching the game, you know, you're watching on TV, but you're also on your phone, like, you're putting your phone down and you're looking up at the TV, because like Bridges right now he's averaging 1.8 points per possession in transition. Like, that's absurd. Obviously, like,
oh my God.
Yeah, those are obviously like a lot of dunks and stuff, so obviously he's going to be efficient. But that just shows how good he and LaMelo are when they get out in the break, and they're going to want to get out in the break. 6.3 transition points per game is top seven in the league. Like, I don't think that's an anomaly. Like, I think Miles Bridges could be a top transition scorer in the NBA in terms of efficiency and volume playing with LaMelo Ball. And then you add, you know, Kelly Oubre is a solid player they added this offseason. PJ Washington's going to be back. Rozier can obviously get 30 at any time. Like, they're going to be able to score and get at you in a lot of different ways. Zach, what do you think about Miles Bridges' ascension so far this season and how it impacts like Joe said, the undefeated Charlotte Hornets?
Yeah, I mean, if he's anywhere close to this, like if this is the new reality for Miles Bridges, we need to reevaluate where we think the Charlotte Hornets are in terms of contending in the East, because, you know, they don't vault to being the favorites, obviously, but my goodness, has this guy had a great opening week. You know, I think the reality is probably that, like you guys mentioned, we've had PJ Washington miss some time. We've had Terry Rozier miss some time. And Miles Bridges is playing really well. So you kind of bring all that together over the 3 or 4 game sample that we've had so far. And you get the Eastern Conference Player of the Week. So my congratulations to him. But I think we probably see him come back down, you know, turn back into Miles Bridges, for lack of a better phrase, going forward.
Let's close it out. I want to talk about Evan Mobley. And we could talk about, it's hard to talk about the rookie class in general because we haven't seen the number one pick yet in Cade Cunningham. But Evan Mobley, like, I was super excited that the Cavs, you know, stayed put in the draft and didn't trade back and still drafted him. I'll kick it right back to you, Zach, because I actually don't even want to lead with Evan Mobley because, like, obviously I think he's awesome. But to come in, you know, and start over Kevin Love and get the minutes that he's been getting, like, that was probably a concern for, like, production and stat wise, right? Coming in to the Cavs when they have Jarrett Allen, they bring in Lauri Markkanen, and they have Kevin Love, and he's come in, he's playing huge minutes right now, and he's been awesome. He's averaging 14.3 points, 8.3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks, and nearly a steal and a half per game. And right now, I think his odds to win Rookie of the Year are +750.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think it's important for me to say this because if the listeners hear you say it, it's just homerism, right? But these Cavs are fun to watch. Like, I agree with you, Adam. Like, this is a team, like, coming into the season, would you have said, like, okay, they're going to be 2-2 after their first 4 games? And those 2 wins come against Atlanta and Denver?
Denver? They held, like, Denver to 87 points. I know they don't have Jamal Murray. They don't have Jamal Murray, I mean, get it, but 87 points to any team is good in 2020, 2021. Like, you don't see teams score 87.
And I just think that, like, it's intriguing to tune in and watch Lauri Markkanen play the freaking 3. Like,
and dunk
Evan
on
Mobley,
Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, which was awesome, by the way. And, you know, I'm a big Joker fan, but that was a fantastic.
Oh, everybody loves
highlight.
Jokic, but, like, yeah. And we talked about this before we turned the mics on. Like, there was, like, 7 posters on Tuesday or on Monday night.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we love the NBA and we love to see that. So, I mean, just kind of up and down this roster, I've been impressed with what these guys are doing. Like, obviously Darius Garland missed a little bit of time, but Sexton did his thing, 33 points, you know, against Charlotte, didn't come out with a win, but we know that he can score with the best of them, really, on his good nights. You know, you've seen Jared Allen continue to succeed, especially on the boards and defending.
He's so good. I don't care how much they hate him. He's really good.
He's extremely underrated. We've talked about it before. And to be able to continue to produce and contribute like he has early in this season with 2 other centers starting alongside you, I think is a big just kind of feather in the cap of people who believe in Jarrett Allen. And Ricky Rubio, I believe, leading this team in assists. Obviously, more opportunity for him coming out of the gate with Garland missing some time, et cetera. But the Cavs are fun, man, and Evan Mobley's a big part of it. Like, I didn't think I would be tuning into as much Cleveland Cavalier basketball this season as I have and will continue to, but it's fun, especially for you.
Yeah, and, like, a few years ago, like, and remember, I believe, in the start of last season, doing a bunch of DFS content and looking at each slate, and it's like, Cleveland's on the slate, but they've been really good defensively. They were, like, top 10 in defensive rating for a while, and then it came back down to earth, but right now they're playing some good defense. And Obviously, like when you have, you know, Isaac Okoro is, I believe he's already ruled out for Wednesday, but like when he's healthy, mm-hmm. he can give them that, you know, wing defender. And then Evan Mobley, I believe there was a stat I saw today that he like leads the NBA in contested shots. Like he's obviously got that frame, and like he's been so impressive. And you obviously watched him in college and everything. It's like he can grab defensive rebounds and just push the ball and facilitate. And like there's been a lot of Chris Bosh comps for him. And if Cleveland can get a Chris Bosh career from Evan Mobley, it's a slam dunk. Joe, what do you think about Mobley and the Cavs? And what do you think about his rookie of the year odds? I think it was, what did I say, +750 right now. Obviously, Cade hasn't played yet. Jalen Green is probably going to be more up and down in terms of stats than Evan Mobley, because Mobley's going to produce everywhere, right? Blocks, steals, rebounds, assists for a center as well. But Jalen Green has shown in a couple spots already this year, like, that he could be one of the 10 best scorers in basketball in a couple years. Like, he's got that type of ceiling.
Yeah, so Jalen Green currently sits as the favorite at +250. Cade, who obviously hasn't played a game yet, second favorite at +450, followed by Evan Mobley, who at +750, that's a bet I'd be willing to take right now. You don't know how much time Cade's going to miss. I think the most exciting, like, if I am a Cavs fan, which obviously you are, if someone's telling me that this could be a Chris Bosh, I would be over
Sign
the
me up.
Moon. I honestly think Chris Bosh is one of the most underappreciated and underrated players in NBA history. People do not understand, one, how good he was in Toronto, but two, how good he was for that Miami Heat team. He was it wasn't just Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh or LeBron James. Like, you see all the highlights and you hear about that team. It's Dwayne Wade, it's LeBron James, and it's Ray Allen's corner three. It's never Chris Bosh. But I like
Chris Bosh got the rebound, didn't he?
He did get the rebound.
By the way, that was not an easy rebound either. We just glossed over
it
that.
Was not, yeah, I would be over the moon. I think Evan Mobley looks great both ends of the court. I was kind of skeptical at first how he would fit alongside Jared Allen playing the four, but he looks good stretching the floor. You know, I think as soon as Cleveland figures out what they're going to do with Colin Sexton, I mean, they're going to move him. It just matters what they get back. I think things are starting to look up in Cleveland.
Yeah. It's not even just us. Like, it's a lot of people that follow the NBA. They're starting to agree, like, not agree, but they've been saying it for a little bit. Like, Cleveland is fun. Garland is, you know, I wasn't like in love with the draft pick when they drafted him, but like he's good. He's a very good facilitating point guard that you can start on any team in the league. And then you have the only thing they're missing is just consistent shooting. Like, Kevin Love off the bench now is going to give them that still. But like that, like, again, they're not going to, you know, their best case scenario is they get the bottom seed in the East and get swept. Right. And I'm not delusional, but like, they're still fun to watch. And the future is obviously bright. They're a super young team. So it's exciting to watch. And Evan Mobley, I loved him in college. I was happy Cleveland got the spot somehow again in the lottery to get him. And I'm glad they didn't trade out of that spot. Let's go to now some overreactions. And Zach, we'll start with you. You have two teams and a player here. And let's start with the team that's probably the talk of the NBA right now. That's the Chicago Bulls. They're 4-0. I think I saw it's the first time they've been 4-0 since like the 90s or 80s or something. Which, like, it's not anything crazy. It's four wins, but there was obviously a lot of hype surrounding this team entering the season, right? You bring in Nikola Vucevic at the deadline last year, and then you bring in DeRozan and Lonzo Ball, and that's as good of a four players in a starting lineup as you can find in the NBA, and they're doing it. They're playing good defense right now. Lonzo just had a triple double the other night with no turnovers. Zach LaVine still showing that insane upside, and I mean, they're obviously going to be a good team, but how good are they? Are they this good?
Hell no. No. I guess overreaction section, but I have conviction in this take. The Bulls are not good. Look at who they played. I'm far from the first person to point out the Bulls' early schedule. But I believe through these first four games, they already caught Detroit twice. Okay.
Without Cade Cunningham.
So what, like... my old Division III team could compete with that team right now. you get the Pelicans with no Zion, and you get the Raptors who are Siakam, and they're tanking.
Yeah.
So, look.
They don't wait till they get Cleveland. Then they're screwed. Like, that's a loss.
Well, let's look ahead, because the next 13 games, 12 of them for the Bulls are against playoff teams from last year. So I think we're going to see them come back down to earth. I would not be surprised after this 13-game stretch that they're under 500. Like, I don't think that's crazy. So this is a team to watch over the next 3 or 4 weeks. And by the way, that one team out of the 13 that's not a playoff team from last year, Golden State Warriors. So good luck, Chicago. I'm not on the hype train.
Joe, I'm assuming you agree. Like, I don't think any of us think the Bulls are the best team in the Eastern Conference or anything like that. I think we'd all agree it's probably still Milwaukee. Obviously, Brooklyn, if Harden can get back to his, where he should be, they'll be in that contention as well. But the East is kind of weird right now, because the Sixers, I don't think the Sixers are a top three team obviously they don't have Ben Simmons, but like, they don't have anybody right now, because that roster spot is like, nobody's playing for them. Shake Milton's out and Ben Simmons out. They got destroyed by New York tonight. Like, that's a team that I'm not really sold on in the East with this, spot in the roster right now. It's not filled. So Chicago could be like a top five team in the East, but like, again, are they this good? Do we worry about them come playoff time with, Vucevic, who doesn't have a ton of playoff experience? LaVine doesn't, like, DeRozan does, but like, they have the players in the starting lineup. I like Patrick Williams, but it's tough to, I mean, Zach made good points. Two games against Detroit out of your first four, who don't even have, who's probably their best player come, months from now, in Cade Cunningham, if he's not already.
Yeah, it's tough, because I think,
oh, by the way, Chicago plays Chicago plays New York on Thursday. So there you go.
Yeah, I think the Knicks are going to smoke the Bulls. I really do. This isn't an indictment of the Bulls. I'm still high on them. I still think they'll be a top six seed. I don't think they're going to be a play-in team, but they've struggled on the road. Look at their two road wins. They won by six in Detroit in the opener, and I think they won by three against Toronto in Toronto on Sunday. I don't know if they have enough experience to make a run. I don't know if their depth is enough past like Caruso off the bench. It gets very, very shaky.
It's funny, because he's actually been really good through four games.
He's been great. He's been great. And I'm not going to discount that. But then you get to like, and no disrespect to these guys, but like Tony Bradley is the backup center. Alize Johnson, like these kind of guys, like these are typically, 12th or 13th men on the bench. It gets a little scary. If someone goes down with an injury, what happens then? You don't have Denzel Valentine anymore.
Kobe White's still hurt too.
Kobe White's still hurt, yes. I will say, I think Lonzo looks phenomenal. I was watching the Bulls, and the Bulls are a fun team to watch. They're my league pass team right now. I was also shocked. I was watching the game on Sunday, and they mentioned Lonzo Ball is 23, and I was like, no way. Lonzo Ball is still only 23 years old. That just blows my mind. I feel like he should be like 26, 27 years old. Lonzo Ball, people wrote him off, after his second year with the Lakers. People completely wrote him off, and I think he has become a very, very good NBA point guard, and I think his best years are ahead of him. I think he can thrive in the system. DeRozan does look good. So if this team can stay healthy, I think they'll do enough to tread water in the East to be, like a six seed, five or six seed at best. I don't think they're going to get much higher than that. I don't think they get much lower.
So the teams you're definitively taking over the Bulls rest of the season, obviously Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Miami,
Atlanta,
Philadelphia.
It's those five, and then Chicago, and then in my preseason rank or standings, I had New York after Chicago.
So right now, you think Chicago's better still?
I don't know. This is a very convincing win by the Knicks. But again, I feel there's so many games right now where you just have to take with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Second like, week of the season, there's
Ben
so
Simmons
many
is really good at basketball still. Like, they're missing him. Like, he's very
Correct.
Good.
Correct. He's very, very good.
What also, about a team like the Pacers?
On fumes right now.
Right. What? So, yeah. He's been questionable the last two games. Like, he's not 100%. And like the Pacers, if they get LeVert back, like I buy into the Pacers each year, but because they have a lot, like top to bottom, they have a pretty good roster, right? Miles Turner, Sabonis, Brogdon, when they get LeVert back, but it's like
Chris Duarte has filled in admirably for
right, and he's LeVert, only 2,500 on DraftKings on tomorrow slate. Right.
So the Pacers are a team I've been torn on, and you know, we saw a tale of two teams last year. Obviously, they struggled. I think they were one of those teams that was hit kind of hard by COVID and injuries last year. By the end of the season, like, we were all rostering O'Shea Brissett at 7K on DraftKings.
Dude, rebounding chances, I wrote up every single day for five like stats, and it was absurd.
It was nuts. And he's, what, 6'8", 6'7"?
And I was like, you kind of should play him again. Like,
yeah. But my point being, like, they were a horrible team defensively the second half of last season, and everything through their first four games has been reminiscent of that team rather than the team they were before the All-Star break in 2020-21. I mean, this is a team now where if you're playing daily fantasy, you legit target every player against them because they just give up so much production. The beauty of this team, you know, from a fantasy standpoint, is they give up so much production, but they also score so much because they have so many pieces that can score.
Yeah, they have
these totals just sail over.
They have a player that should be on the Sixers right now, Malcolm Brogdon, but the Sixers didn't want to do that trade. Zach,
worried about the if I'm worried about the Pacers, anything holding them back, it's their defense.
That's fair. Before we close out with the Bulls, Zach, kind of rank it's early, but like rank the teams in the East, because like I think the Bulls, a lot of people might put them like top three, but a lot of people might put them like lower. Like maybe they belong in the tier. We forgot to mention Boston too. Like I can't get my head around Boston because like Jaylen Brown and Tatum are awesome. That, you know, they have Dennis Schroeder now. Horford's there to give him that veteran, you know, 18 to 20 minutes. And then like Robert Williams, clearly we've seen already this year, when he gets the minutes, he can post really good stat lines. Boston's still there. And like we talked about it, like Charlotte, you can make the case Charlotte's as good, because I think Charlotte defensively has a chance to be better than the Bulls. Like LaMelo can play defense. Like they have players on that team that can play defense. Like Lonzo and I will say LaVine's been really good defensively over the last like couple months, like dating back to the end of last season and everything. But Zach, where do you rank the Bulls in the East? Again, it doesn't have to be just based off the four games, but like nothing's really changed, right? Like the roster's still the same. So it's like, did you have them higher coming in, or where did you have them and compared to the other teams?
I had them somewhere between like 5 and 8. I mean, to me, there's a pretty clear cut top four in the East, and it's Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Miami, and Atlanta. And then obviously Philly can be in the mix there if they're healthy. I just think right now with Embiid not looking great, like the knee soreness is just kind of lingering, right? Like obviously this guy gets out there and plays most of the time through these questionable tags, but with the Simmons situation, like with Daryl Morey saying that it's going to take 3 or maybe 4 years to trade him, like that doesn't inspire confidence. So my faith in the Sixers is a little bit shaken right now. So that's why I don't have them in my top four. Chicago would, again, fall in there between 5 and 8. Them, you mentioned the Hornets, the Knicks, the Sixers, right? And then the Celtics. Not high on the Bulls, and obviously confidence shaken with the Sixers. But Adam, you mentioned the Hornets, and this is the overreaction section still. So let me talk to you about LaMelo and how he's going to win MVP.
Wow. Okay?
Yo.
I thought, wow.
Listen, Joe, you talked about how the minutes have been down.
Yeah.
Hey, it's the overreaction section, right? I can get away
Zach, with it. We were on stream 2 hours ago and you were sober. What the hell happened?
Man, no comment there, but let me tell you this. You talked about the minutes being down, hasn't eclipsed the 30-minute mark yet, and there's a couple factors in that. They had a blowout in there. You talked about Ish Smith getting the entire fourth quarter run in one of those games. And I choose to believe Coach James Borrego, who said, credit to LaMelo. He told me to keep Ish Smith out there because
he was playing
so well. And so that's just a little window. If that's true, that's a window into LaMelo, the leadership qualities that this young kid is already exhibiting on this team of veterans, right? Like, there's not a ton of other, like, super young guys on this Charlotte team. And I just love the way he's leading them, the way he came dressed to the press conference after the opening game. Is another feather in the cap. Just that kind of swag is something that you have to be a 19, 20-year-old kid to be an MVP candidate. Plus 6,600. 66-1 for LaMelo to win MVP. Joe, if they throttle up, right, LaMelo's playing 36, 37 minutes. What kind of stats is this guy putting up? I mean, right now he's 29 minutes a game, right? 23 points, 7 assists, 5.5 rebounds, almost 2 steals a game. Shooting 50% from 3 on 8 attempts. I mean, it's a small sample size. But again, this is the overreaction part of the podcast. And I'm saying LaMelo Ball is going to win the MVP and the Charlotte Hornets will be a top 4 seed in the East.
Damn. I love that.
Wow. It is an overreaction segment. There is, here you go, Zach. There is a non-zero chance that it happens.
I love it.
I mean, I don't hate it at all. I just... Like, he's going to have, in order to win MVP, you know, the one big thing
they have to be, like you said, he has the media
behind him. Yeah, a top 4 seed. He has the media behind him wholeheartedly. Like, the public and the media will be all over that. The big thing he needs to extrapolate the rates he's putting up now. If he can mirror that over 37 minutes a game, it's over. I would not doubt that.
He's got all of our attention. Go back after we post this and listen to how we talked about LaMelo earlier. All of us were like, we love watching him. We got to turn, like, we stop what we're doing and we watch the Hornets when LaMelo is in the game. Like, he is captivating the entire just NBA zeitgeist right now. And to me, there's only room for that to go up.
Yeah, that. I mean, I like Charlotte as a team. We talked about them a lot on this episode. They have to be in that top 4 range in the East for this to happen. But then again, like, you correlate it, if they're a top 4 seed in the East, LaMelo Ball is they're a good team. They're not good enough to be top 4 with Melo having a good season. He's got to be out of this world, which from everything we've seen from him in his young NBA career, he clearly has the potential to do so. And I mean, like, at some point, the league's just going to have the LeBron, you know, thing with Giannis and just don't want to give it to him anymore because, you know, he's going to be right there every year. Sorry, Joe. and then, like, we see this a lot with team. Like, the thing I think he quietly might have going for him, too, he's not on a team with other superstars. Like, you don't it's harder for Durant to make a case for MVP playing with Harden and if Kyrie ever comes back. And then you obviously have, you know, other teams with multiple superstars on the roster. So, like, I think LaMelo has that going for him as well. I would say right now, I think, like, some of the players that I think I would look to make strong cases for going forward, LaMelo's got to be up there. Paul George has got to be up there, just given how much they're relying on him and the numbers he's putting up to start the season. Steph, obviously. Like, LaMelo as a player is not in that range yet, but he's that trajectory. Like, there's not many players with the trajectory of LaMelo Ball right now. So, Zach, with the overreaction, I like it. Or is it just a reaction? Like, who knows? Maybe a month from now, we'll look back and be like, oh, Zach picked the player that's probably going to win MVP to win MVP. I would still be
proud. We'll see.
Joe, on a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised would you be if LaMelo Ball won the MVP award this year? I would say probably like a 6, 7. Still pretty shocked, but like, he's still damn good.
That shock level is lower now after I made that case.
So, I mean, right now, I'd give him a better shot. I'd feel more confident in him winning MVP than Ja Morant. And look at what Ja Morant's done.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying like that.
The East is also, I would say, better than the West now.
Yes. Yes.
Which was not the case for a long time.
I was literally
just going to
bring that up. I think the East is a bit more balanced than the West. The West,
more competitive.
Kawhi, it's more competitive. Kawhi being out doesn't help. But this, I mean, I think we're seeing the East. I don't know if we're going to see the tide shift, but obviously we saw Kevin Durant come to the East. We see a lot of young stars coming out of the East. At the very least, for the next, you know, X amount of years, it's going to be, like you said, very, very competitive. I think come April, we're going to be having many more conversations about games with a lot of importance to them in the East than we will the West in terms of the play-in, teams separated by 1, 2, 3 games and loss column, things like that, relative to the West. I actually think the West bottoms out pretty damn quickly. Speaking of the West.
I was going to say, perfect segue. Go for it.
Yeah. So I just added it to the show sheet, and I saw Zach has it too. I've watched all 3 Warriors games this year. You know, I'm box score hawking right now as we're on the podcast. I think, and I'm not, they're 3-0 atop the Western Conference. I think the Golden State Warriors have a legit shot to win the conference. I really do. I think at worst, I think I'm going to go on record. Warriors will be a top 3 seed in the West. I don't think that's that hot of a take, but I'm just like, this happens to me every year. I say, oh, they're missing Clay. Oh, they don't have Kevin Durant. Oh, Steph Curry's out for the first 10 games, whatever it may be. Just discounting how damn good Steph Curry is. He is so good at basketball, like so good. And now with the emergence of someone like Jordan Poole,
yes,
he's not ever going to be exactly what Klay Thompson is, but it's so important to have another reliable scoring threat to.
So what are they? Steph, what are they going to be Andrew when Klay comes back? The Splash Brothers, is does Jordan Poole get that title, or does he? Is it like Splash Brothers and their friend? You know, like because like I like
foster,
Jordan.
They're like the foster child or something. Yeah,
because I like Jordan Poole a lot, and they're finally like the so first couple games
Splash
they didn't
nephew.
They weren't playing him massive minutes the first couple games, but the last two or so he's been 30 plus. I think he's at 28 right now with about 8 minutes left in the game. Like he's good, man.
So, and the thing is,
Draymond's going to average a triple double this year, guys. It's happening.
This, you meant last year, you meant this year. I get it. I like, and the thing is, Draymond has been dealing with some health stuff, but this game looks like totally fine, rounded into form. They still get, at some point, they'll still get James Wiseman back. You know, Otto Porter, he's not a huge rotation piece, but just provides more depth. You know, JTA is still playing well. Damian Lee is also, I think, an underrated return to the rotation. He just provides another ball handler that they have off the bench outside of, you know, say when Steph's off the court with Jordan Poole or Draymond bringing the ball. But the thing is, you just add Klay Thompson back to this team. Sure, Klay Thompson missed 2 years of basketball, but look at what his game was predicated on, standing and shooting. I'm not saying he can't do more, because he sure as hell can. But you don't have to ask him to do much to put that leg at risk. If he's in the corner and he's open, I promise you that shot's going in more often than not, regardless of how long it's been since he played full court, you know, full-speed basketball. So I think the Warriors are legit. I think they are a contender in the – I'm not going to say contender. I think the champions coming out of the East this year, I think the Warriors have a legit shot to win the conference. A lot of this has to do with the fact that I still think the Lakers are completely overrated.
Well, let me ask, and I'll kick this to Zach, and I'm kind of curious, right? Again, super, super, super early, insanely early. Mm-hmm. But right now, who's the best team in the West? I think it's probably Utah.
Yeah, but I would say Utah.
Like,
Utah's
like,
what, 2-1 right now?
But they're 2-0. I think they play tonight. Yeah, they play Denver tonight. They're 2-0. Denver will be good, and they're going to get Jamal Murray back. The Lakers are going to be good, but the Russell Westbrook fit, it was a question mark all offseason. It's clearly a question mark now. But then it's a bunch of like Phoenix will be there. We talked about Portland's issues. Sacramento's not going to be there. Who knows if the Clippers by the time Kawhi can come back. Dallas is going to be there, but they don't have enough help for Luka, I don't think, to really be a contender. Like I look at the West and it's like you don't have a team that you say, "Oh, that team is definitely going to the finals or definitely going to the Western Conference Finals." Whereas the East, it's like, "Okay, Milwaukee, you'd be shocked if one of Milwaukee or Brooklyn or whoever weren't there." But like the West, I mean, why can't Golden State make a run? They have one of the five best players in basketball, Zach, and they're getting, I think he's not the best shooter. I mean, I think Steph has that award pretty much locked up, but I think he has the best jump shot in the history of basketball, and that's Klay Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, Joe turned up the heat with his, you know, it's talking about the Warriors getting out of the West. Let me break the thermostat real quick. The Golden State Warriors are going to start the season 13-0. Thanks to after they
the hell's the matter with you tonight, dude?
I looked at their schedule. This is not a hot take.
Okay, let's hear it. Come on,
it's an overreaction podcast. The Warriors are finishing up, just barely beating the Thunder on the road. They were down 11 at halftime tonight. They've outscored the Thunder by 20 with 5 minutes to go here in the second half, leading by six.
I give them 12-1. I see one team that I think is going to beat them.
Nah, man. After tonight, the Warriors are home. From tonight, Tuesday, October 26th, they will not head back out on the road until Sunday, November 14th. 8 straight home games. I don't know who made this schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
that's
down
bullshit.
Down in San Antonio, they have a rodeo road trip every February where they go 8 or 9 games on the road. I don't know what the hell happened in Golden State to have 8 home games in a row, but it's surely a gift for this team as they wait for Klay Thompson to come back, who has been participating in individual drills and other skill work. He's supposed to be back sometime, you know, mid to late December. Maybe January if they're being extra cautious. And they'll certainly have room to be cautious with Klay Thompson after such a hot start. I mean, a couple places they could maybe trip up. They host Charlotte, but I think that Steph gets the better of his dad's old team there. They also host Atlanta during that stretch. And then I think they'll take care of business against Chicago to close out that homestand. Okay. So I'm looking at 13-0. And that takes them to a road trip at Charlotte, then at Brooklyn. I think that's where they're going to see maybe their first loss. And I told you I was going to maybe crank the thermostat up. I'll break the thermostat here, Joe. Golden State Warriors, 2021-22 NBA champions.
I feel like I've said nothing spicy on this entire podcast.
And Zach's just cooking with like
– Bro, Zach's out here right now. Sauce. All right, Zach.
I mean, guys, look, like,
Zach, I'll see that and I'll raise you. Golden State Cleveland rematch this year in the finals.
Evan Mobley finals.
That's certainly spicy.
Evan Mobley blocks.
But, like, in all seriousness, though, like, I talked about, like, the West isn't that good anymore. It's good.
Yeah, I mean, it's top heavy.
And it's a lot of, like, young upstart teams, right? Like Memphis mm-hmm. is there. Phoenix, we saw them make that run last year. I don't know if they're going to get back there. You know, like we talked, like again, Dallas, Luka's amazing. They just don't have enough after him, especially with how, mm-hmm. you know, underwhelming Porzingis has been since he's been there. The Pelicans obviously aren't doing anything with or without Zion, but especially without Zion for however long he's out. It's a lot of those young teams with young players. And like at the end of the day, Golden State has a top five player in basketball, a top tier coach in basketball. Draymond is like people forget how good Draymond is just because he doesn't mm-hmm. shoot threes. But Draymond is incredibly valuable. Yep. And they're going to get Klay Thompson back. Like, and then like yeah, Jordan I mean, Poole. And then we talked about Poole. He's emerging. Damian Lee's a solid bench player. And if James Wiseman can give them like 20 minutes a game and develop like. There's a reason this guy was a top tier draft pick last year. Like there's still so much untapped potential there.
Well, there's just so many ways that they can improve this team. Like we talked
what
about
I was gonna say is on top of that, Wiseman is still a very valuable trade chip. If they the are point.
Absolutely. How much can you get for a package, including any of the following James Wiseman, Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, Andrew Wiggins, Jordan Poole, if you have to. Right. Like these guys mm-hmm. have so many pieces that they can either mm-hmm. add back that they get when they get them back from injury or package together to move for probably another like not a player to the caliber of a Steph Curry or Klay Thompson, but a significant piece or two that they could add along the way here, be it in the trade market near the deadline. They could get somebody in the buyout market, especially if they're looking attractive as a title contender, you know, January, February.
The trade for Mo Bamba.
Yeah, I mean, like he would probably be a much better piece at this point compared to James Wiseman, what in terms of what Golden State needs defensively at the five when they can't necessarily go so small with Draymond down there. But I mean, Iguodala looks invigorated, like they don't need him to play a ton of minutes. He's going to be kind of saved, right, for the playoffs. Like Otto Porter's going to play some important regular season minutes for this team. Like to have Andrew Wiggins as, when Klay Thompson comes back, your fourth option on offense is wild. Like this team is deep as hell. I haven't even mentioned my guy Nemanja Bjelica, who I think is maybe in the best fit of his career on this team.
That's a good point.
Like, again, we're talking about guys that are like 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th guys, but you compare that section of the Warriors roster to any roster, like you look at the Lakers. You'd much rather have these Warriors role players.
I
think the Nets is more of a conversation just because of the talent, even though that roster is more aging than kind of this the role guys here in Golden State. But man, like this team could be extremely dangerous. And not getting away from the hot take part of it. Like I don't think it's as hot as I tried to make it seem. Like this team is freaking good.
Yeah, and like again, Klay coming off the injury isn't you can't really project him to be like, you know, 5 years ago or whatever, but like this team was dominating the West with Steph, Klay, and Draymond, and then Harrison Barnes. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, so why can't they, and the West was better back then, I would say. So like why can't they, not that they're gonna dominate the West and just be like 10 games above the 2 seed, but like why can't they come out of the West with that same core, granted older, I understand that, but then Jordan Poole, Andrew Wiggins, potentially whatever they get from Wiseman, or like you guys said, if they trade him. Like, yeah, you let it off as it was a hot take. I think it's lukewarm, but I don't think it's like absurdly outlandish. Again, it's a lot of the reasons I said, like, I don't think the West is as vaunted as it has been in the past. So,
yeah.
And I will say this, You can, I'll take the L if I'm wrong, but like there is zero chance they start 13-0. The NBA is the NBA. They're going to lose a game. And like Steph could sit. And if that happens, obviously they're not winning against, you know, whoever. But like I think there is a border almost 0% chance they start 13-0 just because of the variance, and teams will just, you know, something will happen and they'll lose. But granted, I did not know they had 8 straight home games. That is absurd.
Only one back-to-back, and the front end is Houston. So rest Steph there. Get him ready to go for Atlanta the next night. And the last thing on this team, I know I've been talking about the Warriors for a long time now, but I don't want to joke about, like, injuries. Like, being serious now, Achilles injuries seem to be we seem to be improving in terms of how we can treat and recover from Achilles injuries. Like,
dude, the Rams are talking about getting Cam Akers back if they make the playoffs.
What?
Yeah, and you look
– Sean McVay said
this
that.
Yeah, I saw that last night. I mean, but you look to the women's game, and this is going to be lesser known for probably most of the people listening to this podcast, but Alyssa Thomas for the Connecticut Sun tore her Achilles like early in 2021, and she was playing 20 minutes for the Sun in the playoff games last month.
Wow.
Like, I'm not – like Clay's been out much longer than some of these athletes that are either coming back or are, you know, maybe like a Cam Akers.
I see what you're saying, though.
And look at Kevin Durant. Like, Kevin Durant, they were more cautious. There was rumors that he could come back way sooner than he did. So I really don't have much concern with Klay Thompson coming back. I think it's going to take him a couple games to get his wind back, get his legs under him, just because, like, you can't get in basketball shape by doing anything else but playing basketball, and especially at the NBA level. But, like, the more I'm talking about it, I'm just talking myself into, like, being all in on this Warriors team.
I like it.
It's a fun podcast, fellas. A lot of hot takes, a lot of overreactions, and things will change. Again, it's only been about a week into the NBA season, but we will be back a couple times a week to break down storylines from the league. This is, like, egregiously ahead of schedule, but I'm so excited for the trade deadline podcast we're going to do, and the rumors and speculation, because NBA trade deadline is like one of the best times of the year. But, content wise, Joe, obviously this is our first pod we've done, the first pod I've done, at least since the NBA season started. So we have NBA content every single day at FTN Daily, FTN Fantasy, FTN Bets, live streams every single day, Fast Eddie Fears rankings, articles from all three of us, you know, David Jones, Kyle Murray's doing every, like, it's just the NBA content is just flowing right now over at FTN.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you and I kind of alternate the first look, which is a little different this year instead of game by game, just because it's in the best, in the most respectful way possible. It's easy to scrap a game by game by lunchtime, given the injury reports to the NBA. So we,
I mean, I would have written the game by game today for the Lakers and saw LeBron was probable and it would have been over by, you know, 1 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So first look now kind of recaps the winning lineup. So you can kind of study about process and things like that, previews the upcoming slate with all the Vegas data, situations to monitor, five stats to start the slate is included in that. It's not a standalone article this year. And then just overview of the top price players. We have our value play article, GPP article, Kyle's optimizer show. We have upwards of two streams a day, Zach's super draft picks. I could go on and on about the content, the NBA content, FTN Daily right now, FTN Bets as well, similar structure there. And obviously we still have NFL going on. So there's not a better time in sports.
Absolutely. Zach, any closing thoughts before we wrap this up and I go dive now back into the week 8 NFL slate, because that's the time of year. It's a blast, though, to go back and forth from, you know, my two favorite sports. By the way, just to show you how much attention basketball and football is for me, didn't even realize the World Series was on tonight until about 10 minutes ago. Had no clue.
It sounds bad. I really don't care.
Who cares? It's cheaters and sport. Then the fighting tenacious D Jones. Like, I hope the yes. Braves win just so TDJ can have a good time. But no, nothing for me here to close it out except for DeJounte Murray is going to triple double tonight. 17, 9, Let's and go. 8 with 3 stocks in 25 minutes. Spurs by 12 with 30 seconds to go in the third quarter. So suck it, Lakers.
Love DeJounte Murray, clear breakout candidate this year, and he will continue to be fun to watch. Appreciate everybody listening to the pod. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Apple, all that great stuff. And we will be back next time here on the FTN NBA podcast. For Zach, Joe, I'm Adam. Have a good night. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN NBA podcast with Adam, Joe, and Zach. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at APPfeiffer24, at JMeds34, and at KowaisenbergDFS. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.